Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Happy Friday. It is August 27th. The summer is seriously coming to a close in the next few weeks. I like to push it all the way till September 22nd when it really switches over.
Official.
But yes. So it's another heavy week, but I'm trying to be positive here because there are good things in the world and we're going to talk about them. One of the good things in the world is that our lives are getting a little bit better as women. Greg, thank you for helping us get there.
Yeah, yesterday, happy to do it. Happy. Yeah.
Personally, thank you, Greg.
Please elaborate, but I will. I'm here to take all the credit as I should.
Yesterday was Women's Equality Day. Mara, on a happy note, do you feel like we're making progress?
Oh, see, now I feel like the schmo.
I know you
don't.
You don't.
So
that was our happy segment.
I know. That's why. That was it. That was all we had. That was all we had. So let's start with the happy part. You know, this week there were several celebrations, the awareness. There was a great rally at the Capitol. I thought that was all really well represented. The bummer was earlier this week, or at the end of last week, yet another report came out putting Utah number 50 for equality issues for women. Super bummer. But really, here's what disappointed me the most. I'm reading the article in the Tribune. So this is the Tribune, right? And they sort of did this aspirational comparison to how we can close the gap with number 49, Idaho. And I thought, oh, no, no. If we're aspiring to 49, this is really bad
news. We should shoot with the stars and, like, really, like, just shoot.
Let's aspire for 33 or something, like, nice and, you know.
You know, it's... Okay, this is our happy segment, but let me just say, women in the workforce you can't just automatically describe that as progress. I would argue that my mother is a working single mom. The fact that she was in the workforce wasn't a massive accomplishment. It was a necessity and a reality, but the world wouldn't have been a worse place if my mother could have been able to raise me and stay home.
Why is that
such a definition? My grandma too. My grandma had to work every day of her life and raise kids. Why is that so important?
But here's the interesting thing. So I applaud all stay at home moms. If your family can have a stay at home mom and have a mom there who's there full time, like my mom that was baking bread, making homemade yogurt. I had nothing store bought. I think my first store bought dress was when I was 16. So if you can do that, awesome. But also, if women make the choice to go to work, I would like women to be paid equal to men, have the same abilities, respect, chances for jobs. And I think we're getting there. We were just talking about the gubernatorial debate. I was a woman who was allowed to host a debate with four men on the stage, which was super awesome, which doesn't always happen.
It doesn't even strike me as that being a move. Like, I didn't even know that would be a moment.
I just want to have an awareness moment.
I felt like I had a moment. Thanks, Greg.
I expected you to be there.
These two are making eye contact, just for those listeners.
We're fighting.
So, Mr. Greg Hughes, yes. I just want to point out that when I said, you know, equality.
Yes.
You, without asking, I wonder what the definition is that she's speaking of. You immediately went to, well, the women folks should be able to work if they want. So that's a good measure. That's one metrics. But you wholesale just made that conversation about whether women should be mothers only or mothers and workers. Now, let me just give you a couple of other metrics that we were perhaps looking at equality.
I can't wait.
A really big one for the state of Utah is representation. We are the worst in the U.S. Now, here's why I want to give this a shout out, is because we have a lot of women engaged in civic life. So why are we not making it to the elected chair?
Which Greg noticed the other day. Yes. Remember that meeting where it was everyone there for masks? It was like the mama bears that were there.
Yes.
So mama bears run for office.
And we hear and we have a voice. So as Heidi said, this isn't all bad news. This is not and it's not just about motherhood. and working. It's about, why aren't we electing women at a higher level? Why aren't women, what we know is that women often seek permission to do things. They don't feel as qualified inherently. They don't have as inflated organic natural egos. Like, they need more permissions. But I just want to say, I want to note that you defined equality fully on whether I was choosing to stay home with my children.
Yeah, I always hear the glass ceiling and wages and things like that. Fair enough. This question, you're going to just accuse me of being patronizing, which I'm not. but can we give some space for women watching a political landscape and deciding they don't want to engage in that? And not being wrong for not wanting to. Is there something wrong with that?
I think that's fine, but I want women to know that they have a place there and that their voice matters. And
100%.
And the part of the problem with not electing women is not as many people are running. Women are running, so we need more women to run in the first place. So if you're listening to us and you run. Are on the sidelines, just try it.
We're underperforming on almost every metrics for women. And so, Greg, I think one of the things I'm going to give you credit for, because we've discussed many a time off the air, women equality.
Yes.
And I just think the first step is acknowledging. And acknowledging doesn't mean that there's anyone to blame at that side. But for whatever reason, in Utah, women are not in the boardroom as much. They're not in the primary principal seat as much. They're not, it's not to say it's an either or that they're not influential, but I do think it makes sense. This is year after year where we're at the bottom of the chart for, and it's a certain level of accountability, but so are our top five economics, right? I understand it's a list, but we have to hear that women are underrepresented in most.
So I think I'm going to go to a place where this will be positive, I think.
Okay.
But I never get all the memos on what's right, you know, what's politically correct or everything. So I never know if it is or not. But I think I'm on to something here. I believe that what we've seen happening in our schools, whether you're pro masks, anti masks, whether you're pro racist, critical racist theory.
Please do not be a critical race theory.
Critical race theory, whether it's a vehicle to teach all the rest of the curriculum, pro or con, whatever it is. I believe that there is I've called it before, the mom revolution. I think there are moms, mama bears, protecting cubs that are more vocal. I think it's why you saw in this Zoom meeting with the governor, with all the superintendents of every public school, every school district, and the governor saying, hey, I'll give you the authority to mandate masks in your schools. And they said, hey, you're going to cause a battlefield in these schools. We don't want you to do that to us. I think there should be a lot of wind at the backs of women who want to further engage, further call people out, further, you know, run for office. The needle has moved as of late on education policy. And I would put that squarely in the, at the feet of outraged or concerned mothers. And I think that they should continue that effort in school board elections and legislative elections and anything else that they can. I mean, I just, or that energy, not that topic, but that energy and that intensity has been felt by me. I felt it.
So, I mean, moms are important.
You
moms
thought that. I see your look. You thought that was patronizing, didn't you?
But I mean, because I hear you, and I love what you just said.
I was just trying to be so positive.
But, you know, we were
really
talking
was.
About
I
women, and it. One of the roles that women play are moms. But I want us to fill out that that's just not the – that's a critical role for many women. But I'm talking about a dollar on a dollar. I'm talking about getting elected. I'm talking about flexibility. I'm talking about having a seat at the table. And I just am saying that – we have study after study. So here's the good news. There are remedies for this, and most of it is conscientiousness, and most of it is us believing that it's real and that there may be awarenesses that we can be. I'm saying women need to earn it, and I think women are earning it. So I just wanted to point out once again, we were at the bottom of the list. We can't aspire to
49th.
Close the gap to 49th. On Idaho. I don't want to close the gap to Idaho. I want to stick and I want to like land it at 26 next year.
And the funny thing is we let out this. When you go way back to polygamous times in Utah, we're taking one of those women, a polygamist wife who beat her husband in an election, and we're putting her in Washington. So we started out rocking and rolling.
Hey Mara, I helped. I supported that when I was
polygamy?
A public servant. No, the statute change. The change of the statute from Philo, what's his name? Philo Farnsworth.
Philo T. Farnsworth.
Yes, mm-hmm. The guy that invented the TV. I supported that, so I want some credit right now.
You know, you should have supported it. Yeah. So well done.
High five.
Thank you. Thanks.
It really is a great story, though, where you can beat your own husband. Who dares run against their husband? Yeah. How great is that?
Well, we have two. So I was just going to say. I'm going to take a non sequitur really quick, but like there are, for all of our Sandy listeners, do we talk about this? Sandy City has 15 people running for mayor right now.
And they have a lot.
They have two husband-wife couples included in that.
Ooh,
two.
I didn't realize
like
that.
Like, one was impressive, but they have two husband and wives. I find this the quirkiest thing ever. And if you live in Sandy, you have the most interesting first-time ranked choice voting ever.
Okay, well, I'm going to go check into that. See, yeah, that's super interesting. I knew they had a lot of names. I was looking through some of them. And so, interesting. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Well.
It's a twofer. You vote for the household. You got two votes automatically if the one on ranked choice voting.
Yeah, so one
voting.
Of you. And you maybe. Know, and depending on how it works, you know, whether you're the head or the neck that turns you in the right direction, you know, you're that's both right. going to say, so.
I don't think I'd win a race against my wife, Krista, if she campaigned hard enough. Honestly, I'm coming clean right
your
now.
Your wife is sharp.
I'm not an elected official anymore, so I can admit these things. Yeah, I think she'd beat me. Yeah. Honestly, I'm not being patronizing. No. I swear it on my life.
She has my vote. So.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting stuff.
Others, too.
While we've been talking about mama bears en masse, we do need to recognize that I think just about all of our schools are back in session now. I could be wrong if you have a district that's not. Don't yell at me. I do know Utah State still has to start. BYU will start a couple of weeks after that. So we're getting back to school. Salt Lake City seemed to have a successful back-to-school week, wearing masks, no major problems. The other districts seem to be doing okay, too, so I guess we will watch and wait and see what happens. Today, though, Friday, both Utah State University and the University of Utah have said they will mandate the vaccine. More information is coming out on that, but as always, here in the state of Utah, you have the ability to opt out of the vaccine if you want. So there's a mandate, but there's also an out if you need one. So
I can't wait to watch this roll out. This is going to be I don't know what Democrats, liberals are going to do with this, because we've heard a lot about
with the vaccine mandate.
Yes, because we've heard a lot about equity, not equality, but equity. Anything that impacts a minority class differently than the majority class of people is deemed to be racist, okay? So
or inequitable.
Or that's inequitable. Maybe. So if you one of your largest demographics of unvaccinated Americans are Black Americans and Latino Americans, okay? Tell me how this is not going to disproportionately harm people that have not been vaccinated, maybe not even trusted. It's not an access issue. There's some trust issues here as well. How do liberals, how do they comport the, we're going to mandate everyone, if you want to have a job, or we're going to do the equivalent of a poll tax and take from your salary if you don't over here, and have an impact, if you look at the age group that's unvaccinated of Black Americans, 75% of Black Americans may be impacted negatively by this mandate. Tell me how that's not racist, if that's the narrative. I'm telling you, I just cannot wait to see liberals who want mandates, vaccination mandates, and say that anything that disproportionately impacts Black America is racist. How do you do both? I want to know how both of those things happen.
So first, I'm going to give you the conflation award for the week.
Thank
and
you.
So well done. Well done taking
I'm
that
just
to
trying
places
to keep you guys consistent. I'm just keeping it consistent. Consistent thought.
So these liberals that you're talking about run the BYU, and then they run Utah State. So
although BYU doesn't have a vaccine mandate, they have a mask mandate.
They have a mask mandate.
So the vaccine mandate is at the U.
When you're
Utah
looking
State.
At mandates,
yeah.
Right now in Utah, which is what the topic was, I don't know that it's a liberal bend. There's a chance that it has something to do with healthcare. And I think what thing that I've heard that is important is you can't opt out. And I do think along with these are coming more accessibility issues. I think for the FDA full approval last week was really important for a lot of people. And the rest that have hesitations, my understanding is that there are pathways in which you could opt out of
there
this.
There are. There's a form basically for all vaccines in the state of Utah, whether it's the ones you go to elementary school, you know, that you need for. And Utah has more options to opt out than most states. I believe there's one for religious beliefs, medical, right. And then if you have...
If you love freedom and you want to make decisions for your own...
That's not how they define
medical
it, but
health.
Yes, but yeah. Philosophical
that's
reasons,
the small
which,
print.
Which I don't think most states have that philosophical right. out. So it's a form you used to have to go pick up actually at the Salt Lake County Health Department. I think you can go online now. It's been a while since I've looked at it. I think you can go online. You probably have to watch a video and then you can... digitally sign and opt out. So people have that
option. It's interesting that these institutions are coming to it independently. It's also interesting, you know, this conversation that Governor Cox has had over the last couple of weeks with education and what he wants to do. I mean, that's such an my impression is that Governor Cox is in more of a middle centrist position than than the legislature has been, and how he's trying to thread this has been, I think, interesting because he's been very hesitant to make strong declaratives, but if you read his actions, he's a little more in tune with what I'll say a mandate or sort of a qualification.
Yes, and I don't know how many of you have friends behind the scenes still who've been listening in, but my understanding there was some kind of executive meeting this week where they sat down and talked about whether there would be an executive order. I don't know that those specific words were used, but something coming from the governor's office. So what do you know about it, Greg?
I have two very reliable sources that were directly privy to the meeting. This was a meeting of county health directors, health department directors from across the state, as well as superintendents from, I believe, every single school district had their superintendent on the Zoom meeting as well. And the proffer from the governor, it was the governor and lieutenant governor leading the meeting. I think they led the meeting with Dr. Angela Dunn giving some data, sharing data that she's seeing and that she's concerned about.
Why was Dr. Dunn leading that? Because she's not the state epidemiologist
anymore.
Interesting.
I think because she was with the state, I think that's maybe there was a familiarity.
She's still their favorite.
And really, she's one of the loudest voices on the mandates. You don't have other health department directors that are as strident as she's been about this. But you do have doctors that are leading county health departments, but they haven't been as strong in terms of wanting to see a mandate in schools as you've seen as Dr. Dunn has been. So they led the conversation, both the governor and lieutenant governor. But the offer was this. The governor wanted to empower the school districts and their superintendents to be able to make this decision of whether there's a mask mandate or not for their school district. And that was received negatively by the superintendents because they felt that, and I think it was more political. I think they felt that they were more of a political pawn at that point because not making that decision, but leaving it for them to make was not something that they were looking for by way of leadership from the governor or a decision that they were ready to take on. Part of the context of that are how contentious their board meetings have been in the last year, the high emotion that's going on inside these schools, in these school districts. And this looked like this was going to, one quote I heard was, they want to turn our schools into a battleground, and we're not going to be the ones doing that. And so there was that resistance. I think that meeting ended with a pretty strong understanding that there wasn't any school districts that wanted to have that authority to do it. There was a school district that spoke up and said, "I'd love a mandate, but I want you to make it for the whole state, not me."
What district was that? Do we know?
I do, but I'm not divulging. And then another one. Another
what does it
one,
rhyme with?
I don't. This is just us talking, right? This isn't going out to like everybody under the
it
millions
rhyme
that
summit?
Listen.
Nope.
This isn't going to the millions of our millions of listeners. And then there was another one that said, "Hey, speak for yourself." I don't want a state mandate. We had another school district superintendent that indicated they've been in school going on 3 weeks and that they were not seeing the same data that was being discussed or that people were fearful of. So there was a robust discussion. My hat's off to education leaders. It's a hard thing to do to speak with the governor and lieutenant governor and to push back. It's hard to push back anyway. And for them to really let there be no misunderstanding of where they were, that's not an easy meeting to engage in. And I think it takes a lot of leadership to express the concern they
do. Do you have inside sources too, Mara, that were listening into the meeting?
No, I mean, I heard a similar tact and that they really were clear about the pushback. I want to define, though, the pushback. The pushback was, don't make us the patsies on this. So there's mixed feelings about masks and vaccines from a lot of different voices that we've talked about over and over. But it was an interesting moment because from what I understand, they sort of called the governor's bluff on, no, if you want this, then you show the leadership to do that.
Take the political hit or goodwill, whatever comes with it.
And don't have us once again be the line of fire. Now, I would add to that I think that the mandate that the legislature passed mm-hmm. about not having mandates, which is in fact a directive, I think that also put the schools between a rock and a hard place. I think you see the governor and the legislature to some degree not helping. They did this the last time around too, where they punted to local jurisdictions. And then there's a lot of criticism of local jurisdictions. There's been a ton of criticism of Dunn. And yet I look at her and say, she's delivering her data and she's doing what she thinks is in the interest.
It's
so
not a
there's
ban.
Room to disagree with her, but I think she's doing her
it's
job.
It's not a ban because we know that Grand County and Moab, those schools will have, their students are going to have masks. Summit County. With the schools in Park City and Summit County, they're going to have it because they have a process where they where what the legislature did say is that if it's a medical issue, you need the county, the state or county's health department to be assessing and making those decisions. However, the ultimate decision would rest upon those that are duly elected from that jurisdiction, be it the county or in the governor's case, it would be the state, and the legislature would either accept it or not. You want that, I promise you, because if you take the topic away and you put it into, say, wars in the military, you would never just leave for military generals who've been educated, gone to military school, know everything about winning a war, to make the final decision whether to go to war or not. Those decisions rest with a Congress and with a commander-in-chief to make that because they've been sent by the people to represent them. That's the form of government we have. It's the one that we shouldn't interrupt by way of emergency declarations. If we do, it better be an emergency that we're not debating. It better be, and we don't debate fires. We don't debate floods. We don't debate those things. We can intuitively see what an emergency is, where your processes in government are going to be suspended and you're going to do something. We cannot get used to suspending our laws under emergency edicts. And I think the legislature put some context to
that. So you're speaking of Mayor Mendenhall, but my question to you would be, why did you object? She's apparently called and used the Emergency Act, I think, 19 or 20 times in the same time period, and the only one anyone's objecting to is her mask mandate.
Well,
I objected to the
fireworks,
valid?
Too. I thought the fireworks was a power she didn't have either. I just think
so
that,
why isn't this just a political jurisdictional fight? Why is this about freedom and democracy?
I would argue
when really
that,
isn't it about exercising a local jurisdiction muscle that the legislature
doesn't
like?
Mara, to your point, the more you don't stop someone from just creating their own law, reverse engineering what they want to do and finding vague language that they think justifies it, that you should stop that. It shouldn't have gone that many times. It shouldn't have happened. It's happened, I couldn't tell you how many, but I do know that in the fireworks statute, cities have the ability to ban fireworks on the foothills in certain places. She just said everyone, everywhere. There's nothing in the law that allows for that, but there wasn't a pushback. And then in the same summer, you saw her pull authorities or contrive some emergency power authority that she fundamentally doesn't have. But to your point, if you don't stop it, if you don't bring it up, you're going to get more of it, I think. So I think that's where at some point, something had to be said, and I think the legislature has said something.
Yeah, they said they're going to punish her.
I'm going to let Greg segue us into the next segment. You used the word war powers there just a second ago, so I want to talk a little bit about Afghanistan. We talked about it last week and said, okay, we're not going to solve all these problems, but it seems like our problems have gotten worse in the last couple of days. We've lost at least 13 of our U.S. service members with what we believe are ISIS bomb vests that went off and killed dozens of civilians in Afghanistan. At least 13 of our service members, 10 of them Marines, who were out there helping people, trying to get them to safety. Mara, you start on this one. I want to talk first, not so much about what happened there, but the reaction from President Biden. He addressed the nation. How did he do in your book?
You know, he was clear and he was definitive, and I think he's sticking with a narrative we can't lose, which is we needed to withdraw. And I think that's his safe ground because I think most of us are saying, well, we could have done it better, right? So, you know, if you just talk about his positioning, he stuck with the universal, and I think we can't lose track of the fact that we needed to withdraw. And I think that everybody expected it to, well, it's reasonable to assume it wouldn't be seamless. It is unacceptable to the degree in which we've botched it. So I think that from a position of, well, reminding us that we all agree that it had to happen, it was a strong statement. Yeah. But the fact that he's doing what politicians do, which is not acknowledging sometimes what's not going right, That's true. And I think that what this was really pivotal, right? This wasn't an event in which you say, oh, we had a bad day. Let's move on. This was a really pivotal thing for a couple of reasons. One, I want to give props to the administration and the military for the fact that as quickly as possible, we resumed people getting out. And the only reason I give props there is for all of us, what's most important is that people are getting out. So the military got their heads back in the game and they got people back on planes as soon as possible. And I think we did do that well. It doesn't alleviate the fact that we had this. The other introduction, which is really critical, is this is ISIS. So this isn't the Taliban, right? This is a different entity. Taliban's telling us that they didn't aid it, but that is, you know. So bringing ISIS into this game is really complicated for the American situation there, complicated for our near term. So I think he went with political survival, and he's certainly not acknowledging that the on the ground right now, it's not going well, and the introduction of ISIS into this is catastrophic in many ways.
Yeah. I did appreciate that he took questions yesterday, because so often I feel like our presidents say have their say and walk away, and there's so many questions that want to be asked and need to be answered. So I appreciate he took questions. I'm not a huge fan of how they started out, and I'm sure it just came out wrong PR-wise, but they probably shouldn't be predetermining who gets to ask questions or what those questions were. To his credit, he ended with Peter Doocy from Fox News. I can't imagine that they chose his question. But I do think it's important to be answering the questions on people's minds, because it's easy to come out there with a preformed statement that six people have worked on all day long to make the words perfect. But sometimes just answering people's questions is good. So I think he wins points in that he was answering questions.
That's a really low bar. But it is a bar, because it's one that he typically avoids. He doesn't ask questions. I'll tell you, if you're watching close enough, the big reveal here on how this media treats Biden or the administration comes from a press pool that has foreign correspondents. There are journalists in front of the Pentagon briefing that are not American journalists. When I listen to this, so I hear, if I hear an accent that sounds like they're American, I would assume it's an American journalist asking a question. How many people left to move out to evacuate out of Afghanistan? We don't know. Next question. A foreign journalist asks, and I assume they're foreign because they have a very thick and heavy accent as they're asking their question. Maybe I shouldn't assume that. But I hear a question asked very similar, because they heard the answer. How many, because the question was how many people generally and who are they?
Yeah.
We don't know. They said, well, how many, drills down, how many Americans left to evacuate out of Afghanistan? Answer, we don't know. Follow up, and this is the key, follow up. How do you not know? How is that possible to be engaged in an evacuation mission and not know? That right there is what the American journalists are not doing. They do not ask the follow-up question, because the answer is unacceptable. The follow-up is absolutely relevant, and the Pentagon's answer to that was, go ask the State Department. They have information on those numbers. It reveals the kind of incompetence that's happening. So when I hear that, you know, withdrawal is going to be painful inherently, every withdrawal looks the same, they don't. And there is a level of incompetency happening here. I think there's a lack of empathy. I mean, to think of that bomb going off at that Abbey Gate at that Kabul airport yesterday and those people that died, it is just not, it's worse than Saigon. It's worse than the things we see. You know, it is. And I'm done listening to excuses and finger pointing to go ask the State Department or everything's fine. People can get out. Really? Go talk to those 13 families whose Marines died yesterday.
So I appreciate the passion. I think it's completely unfair and uncalled for that you're suggesting that Biden, who is a lifelong public servant, and no one in his administration doesn't care about.
It's a failure, Mara. It's an absolute abject failure. There's no experience that has led to this moment. There's nothing good that's happened here.
So, Greg, I already told you I agree that we haven't executed well, but you upped the ante.
I sure
and
did.
Spoke to people's intent.
Absolutely.
And it's uncalled for. I think that you can't berate that every American putting themselves in harm's way care. I think that the administration cares. I think everybody cares. And I think the rhetoric of the personal has and will continue to be unproductive.
Well, let me take this unproductive a little one step further.
This last
I want Liz Cheney on that fence at Abbey Gate, okay? I want Dick Cheney on that fence at Abbey Gate. I want George W. Bush and his kids at that fence at Abbey Gate at that Kabul airport, okay? I'm not talking just this administration. We could have got out of there or should have got out of there long, long ago. Every single person that's pushed this mission to this point, I want to see their kids standing up on that gate trying to protect people. I'm just tired of it. And I'm saying
I hear you.
There are air conditioned offices where people are making decisions. And then there are people that are having to live and follow those orders. And it is oceans apart in reality.
So let me tell you from experience, what's really helpful when people are in crisis, and it is to allow rational,
mad,
insane.
Like
yeah, that's exactly. I was going to say irrationality helps. I think what's wrong right now is a 24-hour news cycle in which pundits like us just want to start in real time and dieting instead of sticking with what is happening. Now, again,
those are called talking points, Mara.
I join you in saying this is not going well. And I have yet to defend.
I know. I agree.
I think this has been seamless. But I also find the unproductiveness of starting the post warmongering, you know, the post side is not helpful during the middle of it. And so I think our questions for ourselves right now are, what do we expect? What do we need to see? What do we have to have confidence in?
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of ways they can go about getting this information, whether they set up a website where people can register the need to get out, or even calling our senators or congresspeople. I was speaking to Senator Lee's staff. They were in KUTV studios this week, and I was talking to them. And interestingly enough, I don't know how much people know about what their senators do, and it's not just their votes, but you can call up your senator or your congressperson, and they can help you push a case through if you're having issues with it, and they can file the paperwork. And Senator Lee and Senator Romney are the only senators that I know of, at least that I've heard of, that have actually joined the effort, so their caseloads are together. So if you have the power of one senator, you have the power of the other senator. They can't tell me how many people they're working on, because I think there's disclosures when they call, but they have a large group of people, it sounds like, that either have family in Utah, connections to Utah, citizens, or have the right visas that they're trying to get out of Afghanistan. And I do think that if they did a better job at maybe talking to our congressional offices that are trying to do the legwork here, they could probably get a better count and maybe answer those questions, because I know there's a lot of work going on from a lot of people, but it's sometimes like the communications business, the right hand.
Have you heard about this contractor who's made a king's ransom doing the contract work out there that's charging $6,500 a person to fly him out? I want to strangle that guy. That he would profit off of the madness going on over there right now and not just instinctively want to get people out as safe and as quick as they can. He's charging them.
The other thing that we do know is that we'll still have this crisis after we reach the arbitrary deadline, right?
Yeah.
And so a couple of things that will just go hyper local for a minute. Good for Governor Cox for being among the first to say our doors are open. So we can figure out along that line, because this is we often are there. This happens with natural disasters as well. We're often there for the 15 minutes and we're not there for the long haul. So I think one of the things that we can all personally say to ourselves is this is a long haul, that all the people who need to get out are not going to be out next week. So where are these hotlines? Where do we keep? I've been heartened by the number of Americans, several former majors and generals, who are sort of re-engaging and saying, I have contacts there.
Yeah.
I want to use different ways, not by charging them a ransom to coyote them through. But but I do think that there's a level to be charged against the execution of this. I hear that part. But I also think there's work to be done. And so why don't we, I think every time we move this to just political grounds and don't move it to product, there are still people on the ground. So why don't we use the forces we have? Why don't we demand of our administration what we want? But let's be clear. And then why don't we ourselves start engaging in, a lot of Afghani refugees are going to come to America, are going to come to Utah.
There's going to be a lot of humanitarian help in need, and like, what extra furniture can you get them? Where do we find some place to live? Which is probably going to be the biggest stumbling block.
Right.
But let me just tell you, and I know you're saying we shouldn't be doing post-mortem while we're in the event, and that's what it sounds like I'm doing. What I'm really doing is our news cycles come and go so fast. We move on to where are we going to buy the couches for the people that are here when people are stuck there right now. And I believe what I'm hearing from that administration is they still think they have an optics problem, and they've got a catastrophe on their hands. And I don't think you hear from them the kind of catastrophe we have and what it's going to take when that deadline passes. and the Taliban no longer, they've given you permission to be there anymore, okay, and we know there'll be people there, then what? It's good to talk about what we'll do to accommodate people that we're trying to evacuate. There are people that are not evacuated yet, and they're still there. And I swear to you, watch those press conferences. They want to frame and create a narrative that things are okay, that we're doing this all right. They're playing damage control, and I don't want damage control. I want to know if you have to reset, admit that it's wrong, and send the cavalry and send everyone back in there to find a safe passage for people to safely get out. Do it. If that's what it takes. We're not even having that discussion right now.
I know you disagree with this, but I will say I do have a degree of confidence. I have a degree of confidence with the Biden administration, and I will say that President Biden did what
four I know you other, too well for you to believe
four
that. That's,
other
that's
presidents.
Where's the talking point where you just
other,
read that from?
I'm just clutching my mask. that four other that four other presidents took a pass on. So you have to give some credit to that he finally did it. And four other presidents talked about it but took a pass on it. To your point,
although
I mean,
President
some,
Trump, I don't know if he took a pass. I think he was hoping that he'd be in office to finish.
Perhaps
he
ran out of town.
He had a conditions-based withdrawal that he was ready to implement, which is not the same as what we're seeing. But
he
keep going with your point.
I mean, my point was that I feel like Biden has some sand, and there was no way this was going to be a great. I mean, they've botched it again.
Mara, but you cannot say that this, you know, this was always going to be this way. I refuse to believe that.
I'm just speaking to the underlying. I don't think that there is massive incompetence. I think largely, as you know, within the military, these transcend administrations, and I have trust and confidence in our military structures, and I absolutely have trust and confidence in the empathy. I think that's where you and I are the furthest apart, is which I say, no, there's a ton of empathy there and caring and really deep understanding of
that
area.
He'd take the political hit he needs to take to make those people, get those people safe if he had the empathy. He wouldn't care what his ratings were. He wouldn't care. He wouldn't keep shaping and playing damage control. He'd admit this thing went horribly, horribly wrong. They did not do it the right way, and he would change course immediately, and he's not. He's not. He keeps telling people that it's all fine.
I think their eyes are on the prize right now in that they are getting people out.
But Mara, appreciate the fact that when he says things, this happened last week, he said, people are not having a difficult time getting into the airport. And then they go to the ABC correspondent saying,
they can't get
people
out.
Are being beat with the rubber, right. You know, the fan belts by the Taliban. There's no way to get in. And so what he is saying and what is happening on the ground are not matching up, even close.
Right.
And
yeah,
that
you
has
remember
to change.
We live in a digital world where
right.
we can see what's
that
going
has
on.
To
Only
change.
So much spin can happen. All right, we're going to talk more about that this week. We're in the lightning round right now because we're running out of time. Mm. There's a lot to dig into on this issue, and we're obviously not going to get to the deep core of this. But Natalie Klein, who sits on the school board, has had her fair share of issues where people haven't loved what she said, whether you love it or hate it, over the last, I guess, year or so. But this week, after there was a speech from Elder Jeffrey R. Holland at BYU, where he made a reference to the LGBTQ community defending marriage and that being between a man and a woman, saying that it's time to get out our muskets. We could argue all day long whether that was a great idea or not. But she ended up tweeting, oddly enough, on that same day, there was, I'm not even going to say what school, but there was never mind, it was in the tweet. So Layton High Seminary. So this is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints Seminary. Whether it was the students or teachers, they had a big graphic on a TV when kids came into class that had the pride flag on there. It said, if you are LGBTQIA, we welcome you to seminary, which, you know, I think is a lovely welcoming thing to do. Obviously, she took issue with this, tweeted about it, and now the school board is saying that they're reviewing this post for potential board bylaw violations. Do you believe they should be looking at her, Greg, for what she said here, or is it her right to say this? And does it even matter if she's weighing in? Because technically, seminary, even though kids go there while at school, is not school, it's church. They're off.
Yeah, I'm all into freedom of speech. I think she can say it, but people can draw their conclusions from it. And if she's an elected board member, it could very well
So is there accountability here? Is she not
now
fit
remember,
to be
she's
on this
not
board?
The one that said this, get it time to get the muskets. Now, muskets might be a Revolutionary War reference and not
it is
a
true.
Literal
she's
reference
She's just not happy that they're welcoming LGBTQIA
you know,
students.
But it says Greg's there. I won't say his name, but someone else is the one that made that muskets reference.
Yeah, someone
I think
else
it might be a Revolutionary
her.
War reference more than the actual weaponry. But All that said,
that's a huge helpful distinction.
I know. But what I'm saying is, if you want to take that and you want to draw a conclusion from it, which I think is, you know, as people we can, positive or negative, you live with it. But what I am worried about, and what I think we're living in the season of, is we're going to protect everyone from themselves by censoring and making sure that only what the person that's censoring it thinks is acceptable can be shared. And I don't think this rises to some level of danger. I don't. I think it's a statement. And by the way, I thought that might have been a joke that was in the seminary. I grew up in the LDS church when I grew up, you could listen to hard rock backwards and it was telling you to like smoke marijuana or something. You weren't supposed to even listen to like Motley Crue and like Led Zeppelin. That was how bad it is. That's a far cry from that seminary welcome sign that, you know, in the climate that I was.
I'm happy to see that they're being welcoming. I don't know that every seminary is the same, but I think it's a good welcoming message when you're coming back to school. What do you think, Mara? Should she be held accountable for her statements since she sits in an important position on the board, or can she say these kind of things because it's what her belief and her thoughts and her religion believe in?
So, I mean, freedom of speech is strong and it's real, but I think one of the things I felt like was appropriate is what they said is we are holding her accountable to her elected office. So it's not about there is a representational caveat to time, place, and manner, mm-hmm. and what you get to do, right? Freedom of speech is not say anything you want anytime, any place, anywhere. So I think what was appropriate is to question her because she specifically took a group of students, like a kind of student. I think if this were speech about a non-student issue, or if this was not about the relationship she as a board member held to the population that she was, so a populations of students, you could argue a little more that, like, hey, she's doing her thing, and if she hates, you know, Petunia, so be it. She hate, like, if it was off topic. This was a specific bias against a group of students that she articulated. And so I do think it is germane to her executing her job, and I think it's germane to her her sense of decorum and her approach to her student body.
She said, time to make some phone calls. The world is too much with us. Right? That's what she said? Yeah. Okay. I don't even really get what that means.
I don't know
what
she's...
The world is too much with us. I don't even know what that...
I don't even know what her reference is either. And she deleted it afterwards, so obviously I don't know if she...
But Mara, I just don't know that that's a... I don't know what...
You thought that was a compliment?
Well, I don't think you have to be complimentary every time you talk, but I don't know that's a call to arms in a violent way,
I don't think the threshold has to be a call to arms in a violent way. I think when you have a school board member who is taking a derogatory point of view against a group of students, I think it's worth questioning. It's certainly worth questioning their sort of.
What if they're
ability.
Gang members and they're students? We wouldn't want
to
be.
I think it's good for gang
there.
Members gang to go
I'm
to
not
school
comparing
because
I'm saying,
maybe
I'm just
they'll
saying
get them out of their
the
gang.
The rule that you never say anything negative isn't. True. I mean, there's times.
But maybe don't wear your gang colors.
Really?
To school.
About sure. who you are? About who you are.
Now, I
not
just
what you do, but who you are.
I just think that's a very broad rule that you're applying. That so I do think honest dialogue, we can be critical.
I'm
going to
jump into the deep
as a
end
board
of the pool
member
on this one.
On
in
all
the lightning
topics. I'm not picking
Are you wearing
this up.
A swimsuit or are you nude?
Was this supposed to be lightning, this yes. one? And
this
I went
our,
and blew it up.
This
longer.
Is our lightning round. Sorry. So I'm only going to toe dip here and then we can talk about it some other time. This, for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, as well as many other religions, there is this interesting conversation about a generation of kids who have a very different point of view on the LGBTQ community than does their churches. And it's not just the LDS church, but it was an interesting juxtaposition. It was the first time I have seen a leader in the Mormon church be that specific about the conflict, and I say internal maybe, or cognitive dissonance or whatever. And it was interesting that he seemed to perpetuate the dissonance. He seemed to both say, we love you and we should fight against fundamentally who you are. And again, I say that just without judgment, but it is a very interesting cultural issue for, again, many traditional Orthodox churches.
I feel like it's two steps forward, one step back. Like there's so much room and the arms come open and then all of a sudden the arms close again.
Right.
Yeah.
So I thought it was an interesting thing this week. I thought that it was, there, there was a lot that happened. His speech was actually more interesting to me in many ways on this issue. It was the first time I have heard the church so, well, that's not true. When they said, you know, you can't be a Mormon if your kids are gay, that was also, or if your parents were gay, that was also a moment like this. But
that's a lose-lose. If they just said we want to convert all the gay people's kids, they'd be going, people have been going crazy on that one too.
But it is,
that was a lose-lose. There was no pathway that wasn't offensive on
I
that.
Found his speech very out of voice for what I traditionally know of him. Yeah. And it was just an interesting moment in which it laid clear the mixed message, I thought, very clearly.
Yeah. Well, we have run out of time. I had all these other topics. I always think we can be so quick, but we're just not.
I'm sorry.
So we need to talk about water issues next time we're together. Legislative redistricting, they've got that 3 months to get that all in there super quick. And everyone keeps talking about this busy summer legislative session. Why are they so busy? What are they up to? So much to talk about, so little time, but we have run out. Tell me one positive thing. It has to be just a sentence, Greg, before we go, because I feel like it's just been a real downer the last few weeks. What's good in your life? One quick thing.
Good in my life?
Yeah.
Kids are healthy. School started for my youngest. He's excited. Yeah, it's you know, and I do think we're coming out of, as much as we're talking about some of these precautions, vaccines, things, I do believe we're on the right side of all this that started in January of 2020, and so I do think that's a good thing. And so I'm generally optimistic, and I do like to see people engaged. I know it gets ugly sometimes, but apathy is not good for
this
country.
We all just want
either.
The best thing for our
people
families.
People blowing everything off and not caring, that's not
a
good thing.
I agree. I'm going to stay general. I am very happy that we are at or below average temperature. I really
I
need the
80s. How about this August? It's been beautiful.
I don't need the 90s. I need the 80s. You could start throwing in some high 70s. I would be okay.
The 80s are lovely. If we could just keep them for a while, it just drops off that cliff so quickly.
It does go
quick.
And
I'm going to Glacier National Park next week, and it gets nippy up there, so I need to sustain these warm temperatures for a little bit longer. I'm returning to the first place I ever worked in Missoula, Montana.
Nice.
My daughter was born there, so we're heading back for Labor Day weekend. So it'll be good. I'm glad that we all have happy things going on in our lives. We hope you do, too. Thank you so much for listening. If you like us, give us a rating, tell your friends about us, and we will talk to you next time.